The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
We want to turn now to some very important geopolitical issues. A Senate panel voting on Tuesday to provide weapons to rebels battling the forces of Syrian President Bashar Assad. The first time lawmakers have endorsed the aggressive U.S. military step of arming the opposition in the two-year-old civil war. Joining us now to explain what this means on the Ring Central phone line is Aaron David Miller. He's Vice President for New Initiatives and Distinguished Scholar at the Wilson Center. He's also a former advisor to Republican Democratic Secretaries of State on Arab-Israeli negotiations. Welcome back.
Pleasure to be here.
You know, I was looking at one of your recent pieces again on Syria, how there are so few good options. And it's interesting how now John Kerry is steering us in that direction where Hillary Clinton didn't seem to be able to have the same kind of luck.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are several reasons for that. Number one, the situation is obviously worsening. The odds of a military victory by either side are increasingly remote. And it's a second-term president, one of only 17 in American history, who frankly is concentrating much more. Forget the demi-scandals of late, but much more on domestic affairs. So John Kerry's role has expanded, I would argue, by necessity. You know, Barack Obama's the most controlling foreign policy president since Richard Nixon, but he really has and must give his Secretary of State much greater latitude, and you see it in his efforts to convene a Geneva conference with the Russians, his work in North Korea and in China, and his efforts to get the Israeli-Palestinian peace process up and running again. So, yeah, a lot of activity. Whether it will actually get us anywhere is another matter.
In a piece this month on Salon.com, Aaron, you wrote, you quoted Lyndon Johnson, in fact, back in 1968, quipping to Bill Moyers, in fact, that he felt like a hitchhiker on a highway in a Texas hailstorm. I can't run, I can't hide, I can't make it stop. You say that Barack Obama has the same problem, but that's where the similarities end.
I think so. In large part, first of all, it's not Vietnam. Americans are not directly involved, and Barack Obama is going to keep it that way. I mean, after all, he is, in some respects, the extricator-in-chief. His goal was presumably to get America out of two of the longest wars in its history, not to get America into new ones. And I keep focused on the reality that if he's going to become a transformative president in any regard, I suspect it'll be his domestic legacy. Because if you look around the world, you see, you know, a world divided between, you know, migraine headaches on one hand and root canal operations on the other. There just do not appear to be quick or easy fixes that would earn him his Nobel Prize, for example. So, yeah, I mean, I do think he's risk averse. As Johnson was to a degree, but Johnson had already made commitments that escalated American involvement in Vietnam.
Of course, this is, as Aaron David Miller says, this is an issue that is getting hotter. More jihadists apparently working or on the side of the rebels in Syria. Hezbollah involved. It gets more and more complicated all the time. Perhaps that's the price of a hesitant president on foreign policy at a very tough juncture in geopolitical forces. We're going to continue our conversation with Aaron David Miller coming up next on The Hayes Advantage on Bloomberg Radio.
The Market Drivers Report on The Hayes Advantage was brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. The new 2014 E-Class has arrived at your Mercedes-Benz Tri-State dealers. Experience the most intelligent, technologically advanced E-Class firsthand by scheduling a test drive today. Visit searchmercedes.com today. To return to our conversation now, on the Ring Central phone line, we have Aaron David Miller, Vice President for New Initiatives and Distinguished Scholar at the Wilson Center, also former advisor to Republican and Democratic Secretaries of State on Arab-Israeli negotiations. Aaron, in that Salon.com piece that I was referring to earlier, you say that doing nothing is really unacceptable now. We have 80,000 dead, millions of displaced Syrians, both internally and abroad, a potential proliferator of chemical weapons, and, you know, a threat to regional stability and to Turkey, Jordan, and Israel. What is the president to do?
Well, it's Lenin's favorite question, what is to be done? It's a tragedy, humanitarian tragedy. It clearly undermines American interests in the region. You have refugee flows, you have jihadis, you have the meltdown of a society from which it will take years to recover. The question is what to do about it. And the reality is that if the president decided that it was in the vital national interests of the United States of America to degrade and undermine the Assad regime, he could identify a military strategy that would presumably accomplish that objective. But then the question is, what's next? And who, in fact, gets stuck with the check? And this, I think, is the real problem. There is no military action that the president, this president, is prepared to take that would significantly alter the arc of the conflict. So that leads to two possibilities. If, in fact, we do start arming the rebels and it is insufficient and we choose not to do more, then we, of course, look weak. If we choose to escalate the situation after an initial tranche of weapons deliveries, don't answer the mail, then you enter into a long chain of tremendous uncertainty. And I think at the end of the day, the greatest constraint that the president feels in terms of escalation or military intervention is what, in fact, is the end state. Military interventions designed to achieve political ends and to recreate a sectarian ethnic balance, simply in our experience, at least our recent experience, has proven to be, in my judgment, a risk that is simply hasn't paid out a reward. You're coming off the two longest wars in American history, where the standard for victory was never could we win, but when could we leave? And that kind of extrication, the act of leaving, is not the metric you want to, to judge the performance of the world's most consequential power. So risk aversion here strikes me as hard as it is to watch.
You say the rewards haven't been, worth the risks taken. Is that because we haven't figured out exactly how to do it right yet, or that it's just, mistaken strategy in the first place?
Look, I think, we played a critically important role between 1945 and 1950 in Western Europe. We played a critically important role in helping the political reconstruction, economic reconstruction of Japan. We occupied Japan for 7 years, between 1945 and 1952. Do you know how many Americans were killed in hostile actions by Japanese during that entire 7-year military occupation? The answer is none. Mm. Not a single American. So, yes, interventions in proper circumstances, when in fact you have institutions, when in fact you have clear and unmistakable victory on the part of the United States, when you have willing allies, and when you have a situation of stability, yes, the United States can do extraordinary things, but do you have that in Afghanistan? Do you have that in Iraq?
No, it's clear that that's a very good point. I want to ask you, though, about any kind of leverage we can place on Syria at this point.
I mean, you have several different potential points of leverage. One is the threat to escalate and to involve either arm the rebels with sophisticated weapon systems. We're talking anti-air and anti-armor. But the problem there, of course, is clear. Who knows where these weapons will go? And even if you find vetted groups that are reliable, the question is how much would you have to provide over what period of time? Or you could intervene militarily. You could threaten the Russians, presumably, and the Russians are key here, with that. But the reality is the Russians have a much greater stake here. They just sent S-300 missiles to the Assads. Putin has no intention of allowing Barack Obama to dislodge yet another client. First it was Saddam, then it was Gaddafi, now it's the Assads. So, frankly, I don't think our credibility in this part of the world is very high.
So what is the risk here, Aaron? So let's say you make it sound like it is almost an area we should ring fence and just step back from. We've got the Russians on the one side, arming the guy that the rebels want out, that presumably we want out. So we're not going to oppose him. We have U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry heading to Jordan for talks with Mideast and European allies to get an end to negotiate peace, et cetera. What is the risk of this going on and on? Is it a small risk?
No, I think it's a considerable risk. You have refugee flows, you have jihadis, you have chemical weapons, the precedent of chemical weapons already being used. There's no question there's significant risk, but just keep in mind one other piece of the puzzle here. You will have, before this president is done, a moment of truth on another issue, an issue, frankly, that if from a regional perspective is in some respects a much graver threat to American interests, and that's Iran's putative efforts to acquire a nuclear weapons capacity. I believe, I have no empirical evidence to prove it, but I believe that one of the reasons Barack Obama has not interceded militarily yet, one of the reasons that he knows he cannot have the Russians and Chinese support, both on Syria and Iran. I think the president, to a degree, understands that his broader problem before he's done abroad will be how to deal with the issue of Iran's nuclear capacity. And governing, in the end, it's about choosing. You can't have and you can't do everything.
Aaron David Miller, very well put. Thank you so much for joining us today. He's from the Wilson Center in Washington. Up next, the Federal Reserve in focus.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.